Welcome to Afternoon Tea with Richard Wiseman, with me, Richard Wiseman. In this episode, I talk to mind reader extraordinaire Philippa Scoffey, who is in the Edinburgh Festival with his new show, Six More Impossible Things Before Dinner. We talk about belief in the paranormal, scepticism, and why Charlie and the Chocolate Factory makes him feel anxious. Scoffey.
Hello.
Thank you very much for joining
for
this afternoon. And now your choice of biscuits.
Yes.
We're going to get straight into biscuits.
Yeah.
Lemon puffs.
Yes.
Can I say, first of all, really difficult to find.
Really,
very difficult to find.
Sorry.
I was like three supermarkets before I found these.
Listen, your efforts are not unappreciated.
Okay.
And just so the listeners know that this is genuine, I'm going to...
Oh, how'd you rate them?
Sorry?
How'd you rate them?
This is a good puff.
Now, you've taken a bite out of one of the biscuits, which could mess up my prediction effect.
Right.
But not to worry.
But with editing, surely.
No, I'm a pro. We'll soldier on. There were five biscuits on the plate. There's now half a biscuit in your hand and four on the plate.
Mm.
So we'll call the one in your hand one.
Yeah, let's.
Yes.
Let's
do that.
Can we?
That's one. Okay, two. I'm pointing to the biscuits. Mm. Two, three, four, and five. I want you to choose. I'm going to say now there's a prediction on the board in front of you. Okay, so you got one in your hand.
Yeah.
Two, three, four, five. If you had to choose one of the biscuits, obviously you got one in your hand, so don't let that influence you.
Yeah.
Which of those five numbers would you choose?
Well, I believe a biscuit in the hand is worth four on the plate.
Really?
Yeah, so I'm going to go for biscuit one.
Biscuit one? And that wasn't a force?
No.
We didn't set it up
beforehand. No, we certainly didn't. I'm actually picking biscuit one thinking that's being a bit tricky.
Yeah, okay, yeah. Right. If you open the prediction envelope, I know this is normally the other way around.
Yeah, this is so exciting. Can I put my biscuit down?
I think you should.
Yeah,
because it's briefly. Sense of wonder and awe.
Oh, this is very exciting.
It's good, isn't it? Okay. So you chose
take it out.
Please take it out. Read the prediction.
I predict lemon puff number one.
That's utterly stunning.
That's
Thank
incredible.
You that's
you like your ones funny.
Yeah, it looks like a four.
It does, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
It does.
It does, but you're right to read it as a one.
Yeah.
Now, as a professional...
You're more of a psychologist than a performer, aren't you?
At best. Although a lot of psychologists would disagree with that.
Yeah.
As a professional, I can't help feeling that didn't go...
Can I use this? Can I have this?
Yeah, you can do the lemon
Brilliant.
Puff prediction.
Yeah, I will.
Please do.
That's extraordinary.
It's amazing, isn't it? Yeah.
No.
Now, that was rubbish compared to the material that you've got in your act, let's be honest. For people who haven't had the pleasure of seeing your show, what sorts of things would they see?
Well, there's a sort of fundamental premise which looks at belief and... I think it was in 1873 that John Stuart Mill was said to be the last man who knew everything that there was to be known about the world, and it seems a ridiculous statistic, but I think he was quite a bright chap. And the world's got a lot more complicated, so we have to take shortcuts, don't we? And I'm interested in seeing whether you can take a room full of sceptical people and over the period of an hour make them perhaps invest belief in something that they know fundamentally can't be true. And so I set something up, much as I did last year, but it's different this year, but I set something up at the beginning of the show, and I tend to get sort of 95% consensus from the audience that, assuming I haven't cheated, and there really is no way I could have done, that this particular thing can't be right. And then I do five impossible things, which are all delightful and clever, and then I ask them the question again, and invariably I've now got sort of 70% saying they now believe I have got it right. So what's happened in that period of time that's made them jump belief ship? And that's the point of the show. The fireworks that you get during it. This year I recreate a test that's an approximation of a test carried out by some of the psychic researchers of yesteryear. I do a routine around luck whether, which would be obviously something that you should have talked to you about beforehand. I have my grandmother's lucky watch with me on stage, and we see if by getting someone else to hold it, whether it improves their luck and fortune. Highly scientific as well, the testing.
Mm, I can imagine.
So it's that kind of thing. Okay. It's a whimsy, but I guess the more substantial point is that when you're deciding which medical interventions you want to get involved in, whether who you want to invest your money with, what environmental concessions you're going to make, it is easy to take shortcuts because it's a complicated world, but at the same time, just having a white coat on and being told that Yakult is good for you doesn't necessarily mean it. So I don't know what Bifidus digestivum is, but I've been doing quite well without it so far, so I can't imagine I need it as much as the man on the telly is telling me. And it's, yeah, it's just about really getting people to question a bit more, which I think is an important thing.
So if people come along to your show, as they do, you have that, presumably, mixtures of people who believe that you might have some sort of psychic gift, and then at the other end, the sceptics who are pretty convinced you haven't got that. What sort of explanations are people walking away from with the show?
I've always shied away from giving an explanation as to how I do what I do. I think it closes certain doors down to certain people. Obviously, when Mr. Geller was doing his thing, he claimed it had a psychic provenance. I esteemed and... admirable colleague Mr. Brown claims a more psychological route to his particular style of performance. I don't really sort of give any explanation. I think people's own explanations are always going to be far more convincing to them than mine.
So there's no disclaimer?
No.
Because I know some mind-reading mentalists come out with strong disclaimers, but you're not doing
What am I disclaiming? I'm not claiming anything in the first place that I need to disclaim, I guess. I'm just doing things. How you decide to interpret that is down to your own personal makeup, I suppose, and need.
That's the way you've always presented it. Okay.
Well, the grey man, who's my sort of corporate character, grey because it's bland and neutral, and I always had this idea. I always think good design, be it the interior of a room or the cover of a book, has an element which is unspecified, which allows the viewer to impose their own particular sort of set of filters onto it. But the grey man, he's neutral. I don't do anything in front of an audience when I'm working. The only thing they'll ever see me do is drink water, because the second I drink squash and Ribena, and you don't like Ribena on some level, that's not my fantasy of him anymore.
Okay.
He drinks Ribena, and I don't like people who drink Ribena, kind of.
And if people came up to you after the show and said, oh, we think you have got psychic gifts... Mm. Would you put in a disclaimer at that point, or would you say that's up to you?
I'd ask them why they believe that. And I guess depending a bit on what they say to that will inform my response. It's a really hard question to answer, because there's that part of me that wants to say, yeah, no, I'll put them straight away. But then there's the Darwinian in me as well that says, no, if you want to spend £40 on a patchouli oil thing to stuff up your backside, then go for it. Darwin will sort it all out, kind of thing.
This is a bit like some attacks on the gullible.
I don't even like gullible, because I can't say that if I'd lost a child, I wouldn't go and see someone who was telling me they were speaking to him. I can't say I wouldn't. So, yeah, gullible maybe. Maybe it's not such a hard word, gullible. I know that the second you think you're not gullible, you're most vulnerable. So, if I've got somebody comes up to me and says, I've just spent my last £1,000 on some woman who's telling me that my mother is happy and in heaven and all the rest of it, I suppose I'd find it really hard to not say something that might help tip them towards seeing it a slightly different way. But I don't find I get very far just bullying people away from their beliefs. I was much more evangelical in my kind of scepticism 15 years ago than I am now.
And some performers who do a similar sort of thing to you will put it all on psychology. So a psychological illusionist, and it's body language and so on. You're not doing that, though. There's more of a sense of ambiguity.
Also there's somebody out there doing it rather well already. And I mean, some performers in our world see our friend Darren say, do something, and immediately it's in their act. I've seen Darren do things that I had in my act by a completely different route beforehand, but I've dropped them from my app because no one's going to watch me and go, oh, bloody Darren's been copying Philip again. They're just not. And that's the hierarchy of things, and it's as it should be, and it's right. I'm only ever going to be a poor imitation if I try and emulate him. And I'm not him. The words that come out of his mouth suit him. They don't suit me. The words that come out of my mouth when I'm getting it right suit me.
Now, we were chatting beforehand about scepticism, and many people who've done the sort of mind-reading mentalist thing have come from a very sceptical angle, and essentially their show is a debunking show. And that's certainly one way of framing the entire presentation. It's not the frame that you're using. Do you think that frame works? I wonder why you didn't use it, or...
I had the pleasure of seeing James Randi talking 6 months or so. Were you at that?
Yes.
And he showed us the video of his appearance doing psychic surgery, I think on Johnny Carson or Wes Sullivan or someone like that, at a time when I think the market for it in the Philippines was at its height. And I think you know where this is going, but the bottom line is, having spent 20 minutes on primetime television giving a very, very strong demonstration of psychic surgery and then pulling away the curtain and showing you what was actually going on, 90% of the calls, as I remember it, were asking where you can go and get psychic surgery. So no, it clearly doesn't work. And again, if I'm in the position where I've been given a terminal illness, told I'd have a terminal illness, I'm going to... If doing nothing guarantees me death, and doing that, there's a chance, or not, but there's a perception of a chance, then yeah, I'm going to go for it, I guess.
So if you stood on stage and said this stuff isn't genuinely psychic or paranormal, a lot of people in the audience who need to hear that message mm-hmm. are turned off by precisely that, yes. that message. Yes. If they come along to your show and their beliefs are challenged and they are doing the work, mm-hmm. essentially, and thinking, well, hold on a second, he's not claiming to mm-hmm. be psychic and so on, is there more chance, you think, of those people shifting their position?
Yeah, I think... I'm not seeking to shift anybody's position. It is an entertainment, first and foremost, and I want people leaving having had an interesting hour, and if it's informed them in some way or got them thinking on a slightly deeper level, that's grand, but that's not the primary goal. I do think, yes, softly, softly, catchy monkey kind of thing.
And that touches then on the relationship with scepticism. The last few years there has been a sort of rise in, for want of a much better word, organised sort of scepticism, yes. and so on. What are your feelings about that?
That's a difficult question. They're singing from the same books as I read and subscribe to. I don't know whether they have a true desire to share information or whether they have a true desire to show the world how clever they are. I'm not sure. And I think even if it isn't the latter, it sometimes comes across as the latter. I don't know. I don't know why they have that. I do know how I have that need. I've had that need in the past. I've been incredibly frustrated with people. I went to see this psychic. She was brilliant. She told me things she couldn't possibly have known. And there is that part of me that just reacts and wants to sort of bash it out of them. But I also realise how futile it is and how much that's to do with me. That I certainly, when that mood takes me, I certainly can argue that there is some great sort of altruistic share proper information thing going on with the world. It's not. It's about me. It's frustration and exasperation and see the world through my eyes, you fool. And yeah. So no, I don't know that I'd march behind their banner, but I certainly, you know, I agree with them. I don't necessarily agree with the methods.
But I'm interested in the kind of rise of organised scepticism. Mm. There does seem to be more about now than there was 5 years ago. Yeah. Where that will lead is quite an interesting one.
I think you'll find a level, though, as well. If you've got a body of water and then you throw a big bucket into it, it sloshes around for a while before it finds a happy medium, ba-boom. So I think there's a bit of that going on at the moment. Suddenly the sceptics seem to... They're a bit like the Democrats, aren't they? It's like herding cats, organising them. So they sort of come together, and this is probably a fairly unique feeling that we've managed to fundraise and get adverts on buses, and this is brilliant. We've got Mr. Dawkins spearheading for us. I'm a huge fan of Ben Goldacre's book. I think it's a wonderfully written... I don't know the guy, I don't know what he's like, but I like his book very much. And I think it should be compulsory reading in every school. As should Derren's Trick or Treat, actually. I think that's a brilliant sort of treatise on what is and what isn't. It's a good thing, and I think it'll find a more sort of sustainable... level. I think it was a bit excited. Look, we've got posters! Ha! Ha! Get that, God! Can you do some more mind reading, Richard?
Not with the lemon puffs. I've done so badly on that. I'm not doing any more.
Biscuit Four would have been my third choice, so don't be hard on yourself.
I have to blame another magician for Biscuit Four, because they said you'd choose Biscuit
Did
Four.
They?
I was going to go with Biscuit One.
I should have trusted
my intuition, but oh no.
You could have at least gone to the trouble of writing, I might be three out on the other side. Lazy!
But in terms of books, I mean, you'd say to people, this is the book you've got to read, where would you go?
I'm a big Charlie and the Chocolate Factory fan, love that book, and still read it occasionally, and still worry that he's not going to get a ticket, so that tells you how well written it is.
It's always a worry.
It really is, yes. I know you think I'm joking, but I genuinely I think it's the most magical book.
Have you ever read it when he hasn't got the ticket?
Not yet.
Right, but give it time.
Yeah, give it time. Well, it's the, you know, it's sort of
nobody can be that lucky.
No.
And my final question,
yes,
is that on the table over there, I think it's on the table.
Another sure. trick?
No. Oh, don't get too excited. Shame. It's more exciting.
You're making me feel so much better about myself.
I can repeat the lemon puff one. I was thrown by you picking up the lemon puff, and you see, that was the thing. That I thought they were all going to be on the plate.
Yeah, that's what. That would
me.
Be it. No.
I'll throw it on the table.
I can't believe you've gone to this trouble. I'm picking up the envelope, dear listeners. I can't believe you bothered. And I thought, it's strange. You've got a whole packet of biscuits on the side there. A bit tight. You only put 5 on the plate. But I didn't say. I'm a guest.
Yeah, well, you know, it was the whole thing of psychological build. And I thought, if I got it right, it'd be great.
Ah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but... Yeah, no, it would have been.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it would. Let's try and picture that.
Yeah.
It
was all right, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So my final question is that somewhere around over there, there's a £10 note. Okay? Mm. Yeah. Mm. You're going to get that £10 note.
Right.
Because everyone who's coming on the podcast is getting paid £10.
Yes.
Which is quite exciting. Yeah.
Why else do you think I'm here?
Precisely.
It's not the tricks.
It's not the lemon puffs. So here's my question. How are you going to spend the £10 to make yourself maximally happy?
What could I do with £10 that's going to make me really happy?
It's a sunny day. You know, now it's a sunny day in Edinburgh. Yeah.
I guess the most fun I could have with £10 is to go and pin it to a wall in a public place and just watch for a while and see what happens. That might be fun. I might get £10 worth out of that. Or I might break it down into pounds and get 10 goes at the same game.
So you'd put the £10 coins on the wall?
Yeah. Or I might write "do not touch" on it and just leave it on the floor and see what happens.
Nice.
Might.
Yeah. Would you actually do that?
No, of course not, but it makes me sound interesting.
Philip, where can people catch you? Where's your...
They can come along to the Gilded Balloon at 6:45 up until the 31st.
And will you be incorporating any lemon puff material in the show from now on?
Well, I was going to, but you've set the bar...
So low.
What? No. I thought it was a very brave performance you gave there.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, you can have the remainder of the packet of lemon. Puffs.
Really?
Yeah, that's yours to keep as well. And so you get a tenner and half a packet of lemon puffs.
Brilliant.
Thank you very much for joining me.
Thank you very much indeed. Thank you.